CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Thank you very much. We went over 60 grand before we even got done asking.
It was done before the full week was up, and we just broke through the barricades, and we're going to keep going.
That's the voice of Phil Conlon, Classical Underground, Wednesday 6 to 8. And now we're headed for 75 grand. We're going to supplement
And we will do it.
Yeah. We're going to get a first draft choice out of this. So please stay with it because, you know, this station is living up to its responsibilities, and we're proud of all the support. And we thank particularly those who listen to the Taylor Report. You've been terrific and inspires us to keep on keeping on, as Matt said. And we want to make sure today we dedicate the show to Momia Jamal and to Leonard Peltier because we want to help the outgoing president with his final duties. He is to pardon these two gentlemen who are both victims of racism, discrimination, is embedded in American history. And we call out to that president. He's got the power. It's true that Bill Clinton did not have the courage to live up to his promise to Robert Redford that, yes, he was going to free Leonard Peltier. Now, Canadians have a responsibility because Mr. Peltier was arrested in Hinton, Alberta, on the basis of one lousy, dubious affidavit, which was later considered worthless. And so Canada should say, return him to us since you improperly, illegally, and dishonestly removed him from Canada. So we want that done. I would say also, by the way, while we're going to be talking today to Danny Haifong of Black Agenda Report, who's written an excellent piece that we all need to talk about in this matter of policy towards Syria and the so-called left in America. And then we're also going to speak at about 5:20 to Norman Otis Richmond, once again about one of our favorite topics, Lee Morgan, the efforts of Lee Morgan to organize black artists and to oppose discrimination in the entertainment industry, something little known. And Norman has written an article called The Iconic Trumpet Player, Lee Morgan. And at a halfway point, we will be speaking to Christopher Black, a outstanding lawyer who practiced before the International Criminal Tribunal for both Yugoslavia and Rwanda. And he's written a novel. I don't know if you'd read this kind of novel, Phil. The title of the novel is...
I'm very interested.
Beneath the Clouds, The Struggle for Truth and Justice Can Turn Deadly, novel by Christopher Black. And what do you call this? Crime noir? Some people read the. I enjoyed it very much before the what they call the procedural. Somebody called police procedure novels.
Yes,
You get that kind.
And I have to admit, I love these things. So I'm really looking forward to Christopher Black's book.
And we'll look forward to talking to Christopher Black at 5:30. I think we are joined now by Danny Haifong. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hey, thank you very much for joining us. You, of course, have. I should just tell our listeners, an Asian activist and political analyst in the Boston area, and you can be reached at what is that site you could be reached at? Wake Up, is that it?
Yeah, it's just my email, wakeuprise1998@gmail.com.
I guess at Black Agenda Report as well.
Black Agenda Report, you can find them.
Well, we're really glad to be talking to you because I think you've rendered a very important public service. One of the major contributors to Counterpunch, which is an excellent journal, everybody appreciates it, I think. Mr. Dreitzer wants the left to talk about something that he says everybody's been silent about. And this is the matter of how the left should regard the current fighting in Syria. And the title of your piece is Break the Silence or Support Self-Determination in Syria. The answer should be obvious. As I understand his position, and you lay it out in your article, he's attempting to straddle two points. He's critical of those who support terrorist groups. But on the other hand, he says he's also critical of those who are, he used the word, have a fetish about solidarity with the Syrian government. I don't know if that correctly characterizes it, but where do you find fault with the way he's laid this out?
So my main disagreement with him was on a point that you outlined that I think, disappointed me greatly because of the respect that I have for Dreitzer and Counterpunch generally. But I feel like on this question, it's really important to understand that in order for the anti-war left, which he speaks about a lot in the article, in order for it to really be a factor and to really influence developments around the world, of which the United States is the primary warmonger and the primary criminal, it's really important that those that are under attack from U.S. imperialism and war are the ones that we side with. And we don't have to agree with everything that the Syrian government or any of the aligned forces that are fighting U.S. imperialism and its allies right now. We don't have to agree with everything. But we have to take as objective a position as possible. And I feel like his position ended up falling into this abyss of abstraction where the anti-war left needs to take a position against all sides in the war, when we have to understand that that's not how war works. Wars are political conflicts. They are shaped by the prevailing forces, amongst the various players involved, the class forces, the interests that are backed by those forces. And we have to really observe what's happening here, not just cite, which is what he does, from mainstream corporate sources that demonize the Syrian government and that, cite from organizations such as the White Helmets, which have already been proven to be funded directly by the U.S. and U.K. governments, as well as indirectly from their foundation partners. So, it saddened me because I think that the time that he wrote the article was right before the election in the United States for president was about to be decided. And what I felt like was happening was that under the assumption that Hillary Clinton was going to win, that somehow the left needed to reorient itself to those conditions. Because, I had a personal conversation with him. What are we going to do when Hillary Clinton wins? She's going to escalate. And that's true. But that doesn't mean that we should have, or that we should, break our historic, purpose and commitment in the United States to fighting for the self-determination of people all over the world, which is the primary thing that I think that the anti-war left really needs to do. And so I was just deeply disappointed, and I felt like I had to counter it in some way because, he's a very respected journalist and a lot of people follow him. So, I felt it was needed to get the other side out there.
Well, he did invite people to comment, and we're very glad that you did in Black Agenda Report. I want listeners to know this is Danny Haifong, who writes excellent pieces. I see them at Black Agenda Report. Please go to that site. You made some excellent points, many excellent points in the article. One thing that I was struck by is that, as you say, there is this orientation, at least as I read it, in what is we're going to call the American left. They tend to be rather dependent on media, which is actually Western media, capitalist media, pro-colonial media, and they're very susceptible. I don't understand. It seems to me that as somebody of the left, one of the identifying features of a left person would be internationalism, mutual respect amongst peoples. When the left talks about Assad, and they use, and some call him a dictator, or he's brutal. He's always brutal. People watching him when he's interviewed notice that he seems to be very intelligent. He seems to speak to the point. He seems to be kind of factual. Why can't there be minimum respect for him and say, well, here's what's wrong with it, what he just said, rather than just simply have a picture of him with an arrow across it?
Yeah, I think that what's interesting about the position that Dreitzer took, which I feel like is indicative of the primary problem and crisis that, the left in the United States currently faces, what's striking about it is that it falls back on a lot, as you said, of not of the corporate media, but also all of the things, all of the forces that the corporate media stuffs down the throats of the population in the U.S. and West, namely white supremacy and the idea that the U.S. is exceptional to all other people in the world, partly because they're not white. So the U.S., or they're not seen as white, so the U.S., you know, corporate media, you know, often paints leaders around the world and governments around the world that do not follow its diktat as basically savage nations that could do nothing right and that ultimately oppress its own people for the sake of oppressing its own people. Yeah. And, you know, for left journalists, I feel like the commitment that we have to take is to completely deconstruct that narrative. And one of the ways that we have to do that is something that Dreitzer has historically done, but he decided not to in this piece, which is to look at the objective factors, do our research on what is going on in Syria, and not just talk about which he does, that the so-called revolution in Syria is not a revolution at all, that it is, in yes. fact, a proxy invasion, but also look at where the Syrian people are. Look at what they want. I mean, you can do this from the United States. I work closely with the Syrian American Forum, and they can give, you know, and it's an amalgamation of different classes of people, you know, Syrians from all walks of life. But there's one thing that they are all united on right now, which is the preservation of their current government, which they voted in by almost 90% in 2014. So we have to look at what do the people want. And I feel like that is something that the left has to respect in the United States. It's the self-determination of people oppressed by our government. Our one mission is to bring down our government's policy of endless warfare. It is not to decide what the Syrian people want. I feel like that's the biggest mistake. It's really, it's the entire political landscape in the United States that is so complicated with the notion that we really decide what oppressed people all around the world do, and that's not really our primary objective, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah, but by the way, also, I didn't notice that Dreitzer or others who of like mind, the most dangerous thing that we're dealing with, surely, is that the United States government has taken it upon itself to be able to declare, stand up to a microphone like President Obama and say, President Assad must step down. We have to have regime change. That is an immediate full stop, red light alert, and say, no, you don't have any such power. And this is neocolonialism to the nth degree. And that's where we should rally, surely.
Exactly. That's exactly where we should rally. And you know, and that should be just the basic principle of an anti-war, anti-imperialist left. And then the way that's the only way we can get further and really observe, well, what exactly is going on in Syria? What is the character of the Syrian government? Does it truly represent the Syrian people? What is the history of Syria? What is the history of the entire region and its relationship to the U.S. and its partners? Because if one were to, you know, take the initial position of we need to defend and uphold self-determination, we also need to reject all U.S. wars and all of its partners' wars, then we can actually start to observe, well, yeah, the Syrian people voted in Bashar al-Assad in 2014 by 90%. Yeah, it's true. The Syrian government provides certain things for people like free education and healthcare that you know, many countries in the region don't have and no longer have because of the United States and its partners. I mean, look at Libya. Look what happened in Libya and Iraq. Those were two countries that both had governments that were independent and took a development model that the United States and its partners didn't like. And now look at what happened to them. So if we want that for Syria, then, of course, let's ignore what the Syrian people want. If we actually want to see an end to all of that, then we need to learn from others.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. It strikes me that in a previous generation, this discussion about the armed struggle backed by the monarchs of the Gulf and the United States, mm-hmm. Britain, and France to the nth degree, along with NATO, Turkey, and with the aim of removing the government and changing its economy, which is part of the U.S. demand, it has to become part of the neoliberal. And they say, and the new word is, well, there's an issue of terrorism. But if Syria is standing for secularization and popular education, right to an education, medicine, and respect for various classes within the society, the people fighting them should be called counter-revolutionaries, right?
Yep. Yes, and that's what they've been. I mean, you know, he says in his Eric Dreiser says in his article that, you know, we can't delude ourselves in thinking that, you know, the Syrian government and the Russian government are some sort of pure entities that, you know, are not committing crimes in Syria. And the question I would pose right back is, well, prove those crimes, and he doesn't in the article. But furthermore, the forces, he says, in Syria are there, in fact, the allegiance of imperialism and as counter-revolutionaries. But he doesn't go so far to the point, which is, I think, a primary importance to the U.S. left, that the Syrian government represents then is a victory of a national liberation movement that's respected. Syria was under the system prior to World War II, and it wasn't until, you know, intense struggle, you know, that to be. So on that basis alone, if the Syrian people want the government that they have erected, the Syrian government, the Syrian people should be defended in their wishes. And that's the only way the U.S. And or left is really going to get out of this fog that I think, you know, 8 years of an Obama presidency, but even prior to that, you know, the Iraq war protests never went so far as to say we want, you know, Iraq to determine its own destiny. It was really about we want to stop occupation. We want to stop troops being sent over. You know, we want to stop this element. But still, the reason why it was able to die in the way it did was because it was, you know, the political reality of the anti-war leftism is so important over the last 30 or so years that things, the ideas and positions that have festered in these groups, you know, there's only element of what is driving the anti-war left, not self-determination, it is imperialism. It's the ideology of imperialism.
Mm-hmm. This is Danny Haifong. He's written an excellent piece in, I urge you to read it, in Black Agenda Report. And lastly, I'm always struck by this, and I put the same question to Stephen Gowans, who very much agrees, I think, with your thesis, and has written about these matters, is that when people identify as left, particularly in the United States, and they talk about the struggle in Syria, and they use words like revolution, which really galls me, but I don't notice that they produce anybody's party program or slogans or leaders. Who the heck are? Where are these phantoms? I don't understand. If they actually believed their language, why wouldn't they say so-and-so, the wonderful popular leader with a program to advance the masses of Syria? I don't see. Nobody ever does that.
No. I mean, that line really promoting a lie. They can't prove it. They can't back in 2011 when there was all news around the corporate media during the so-called Arab Spring. Now, look at these protests that are happening in Syria. The protests, these legitimate protests against the government. When one looks closer, actually, a lot of those protests are, you know, armed fire breaking Libya and getting an armed confrontation with Syrian security forces. And the plan has been promoted more and more and more in order to obfuscate the fact that these revolutionaries, you know, any given day, have all stemmed from, you know, bandits of the countries currently waging war against leading to December and into all sorts of pieces and leave it weak. So Iran and Russia and China become increasingly isolated in a region where the U.S. and its allies are being seen as illegitimate, oppressive, and exploitative players rather than mutual partners, which is what China and Russia are increasingly being seen as. So there's a geopolitical aspect to this that has compelled the U.S. corporate media and all of its allies to create certain narratives, these fighters, when in fact there are so many people who have serious
we're losing you just a bit.
Into the border, Syria, the Turkish, the Syrian border, the Jordan border. Have ideologies, these Wahhabi ideologies, looking to basically get a cut of Syria and create a situation of chaos, which is what happened in Libya. So,
yes.
You know, I think all of this has been proven, and so it's disappointing to see when someone who has taken definitive positions against U.S. empire water down his position for the sake of some sort of peace initiative, which to me sounds more like defeatism for the sake of unity, which does really build an anti-war movement that will front and challenge our government here in the U.S. and the West.
Well, you summed it up very nicely. Danny Haifong, we really appreciate it. An excellent article, Black Agenda Report, and we look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Yeah, of course. Give me a call or an email.
Thank you. That's Danny Haifong,